Hi, welcome to episode 5 of the CBM podcast. I've been on holiday for the last few weeks, so Sam has very kindly gone solo and had a conversation with Paul and Jan Davis from Coventry West about their work in Holland, or the Netherlands, I'm not sure which. They have been working there for years, so they've had lots of experience and have got lots of interesting things to say. So thanks to Sam for doing this, and take it away.
So, Paul and Jan, how did you get involved with CBM?
About 20, 22 years ago, we had taken a family holiday. We had two children at the time. John was 10, Hannah was 6-ish. And we'd taken a holiday probably the year before in Holland to just a holiday camp, and thoroughly enjoyed it. And on the Sunday, we went to the Pijnacha Ecclesia, which is commonly called The Hague, or was originally to us Anglophiles, or Den Haag for Dutch. And we'd suddenly realised there was lots of brothers and sisters from England that had been there the week before. So we thought, wonder what that was. And then...
We obviously asked, we went back to a brother and sister for lunch, didn't we, on that Sunday. And then a year later, in the Christadelphia magazine, was a request for people to go and help. And we wanted a positive experience for our children, so preaching-wise, some really enthusiastic people. We'd been on campaigns, hadn't we, before we were married. We just thought it's a good opportunity to take these children.
And so we contacted the brother who was organising it.
And he was very wary because he didn't know us. He was a bit worried about us going.
The dodgy...
With a family as well, how's that going to work on a campaign and everything else?
So he was quite concerned.
Bottom line is we carried on going. We've been going ever since.
For 20 years?
Yes.
We haven't been every year.
So you could almost say it was accidental, but nothing's ever accidental, is it, as we know? And once we started doing it, you become connected to the brothers and sisters. You connect to their challenges, and if there's something you can do to help, you do. So that's it, really.
They're part of your extended ecclesial family, really, aren't they?
Yes, yes.
Go through the highs and the lows with them. And...
Can you just give me like a brief rundown of what the Netherlands is like?
You could say the difference between Holland and the Netherlands.
Right, okay, this is a good point. We used to say we weren't on the Holland, or campaign to Holland. Actually, that's not quite correct. Holland is a region within the Netherlands, a bit like a county, but it's a bit more.
There's two counties.
There is a North Holland and a South Holland. And
as provinces.
Provinces. So the Netherlands is the country, okay? I think it's probably taken us 10 or 15 years to get that one right.
But we are usually on the campaign in Holland.
Usually.
West, you know. Sort of very populated part.
So there has been brothers and sisters in the Netherlands probably since the 1950s or thereabouts. In the sort of growth of looking outwards from the UK, from CBM and others, ALS in the early days, in the 1950s, various brothers and sisters actually chose to live in the Netherlands, certainly in the late 50s and 1960s. Out of that arose some interest. There was a very early campaign, I think in the early 1960s, at the Delft Technical College, quite a technical institute, and two of the first brothers who were baptised in Holland came from that event. There were others as well. And so what then grew through the sort of 60s, 70s, 80s was small groups of brothers and sisters, never very numerous. The Netherlands.
You're saying Holland.
Okay. The Netherlands is a very open country for immigration from all sorts of places. So quite diverse background. Indonesian, there's been Indonesian brothers and sisters.
African
brothers and sisters. As well as native, obviously, Dutch people. So what that has tended to mean is people would find the truth, be baptised, join one of the ecclesias, and then maybe a number of years later move to Canada or somewhere else around the world.
Okay.
So it's quite... So there are two main ecclesias, one which was originally in The Hague, Den Haag, which actually meets not there, it's about, what did you say, about 15 kilometres away.
Yeah, probably.
Nowadays, and further east in what was Ada, which is a smaller industrial town.
It used to be Amersfoort.
It did, that's true, yes. Again, because a brother and sister lived there, and who was key in actually prompting the truth in the Netherlands. And then a family ecclesia up in Rolde in the north. And that's the way it still is today, with the ecclesias much, much smaller.
Probably a maximum of 20 brothers and sisters, yeah, isn't there?
But spread, and so therefore part of what we do nowadays is much more about how do we increase and help share fellowship with them when we actually go. So, three small ecclesial groups.
Cool, and so... the Netherlands. As a country, is language an issue?
Nay. I am a confessed non-linguist.
You did German, so you can understand quite a bit of Dutch, but you don't need to speak Dutch at all to come, because the majority of them speak perfect English. It's only really if they're over 80. Yeah. They don't speak much English, but they smile.
And communication is always possible. Communication is always possible.
They are just happy for us to be there, really, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah.
So what would a typical year, say, look like in terms of CBM work?
Well, for more than 50 years, there were two vacational campaigns sponsored by these small ecclesias in the Netherlands. That's an amazing example, that these small groups of brothers and sisters felt the need to preach and spread God's word, so that they invited, if you like, manpower from the UK and woman power and children power to actually just help them in their preaching. So
it's mostly leaflet distribution, isn't it? But there is actually a Dutch Bible exhibition, isn't there?
Yeah.
Which hasn't been used for quite a few years.
Yeah.
But
likewise, when ecclesias in the UK went through seminars, they did seminars. Of course, all the material was in Dutch. The few brothers that were there spent all their time just supporting. There was two seminars running in one region at a time, and things like that. There's various literature and books. There's books uniquely in Dutch, not in the English language as well. So language per se isn't really a challenge, is it?
But now we tend to still do quite a bit of leaflet distribution, although that may become a bit of a problem in the future. But we're really there just to support them.
What they want doing.
We have a study weekend. We're down at present to one week a year. Probably COVID hit, and the Easter group were mostly older, and it hasn't been resurrected. It may well be at some point in time. We go in the summer normally. We spend the weekend together. The study is in Dutch and English, which is interesting. If you understand both, you get it twice.
No chance. No excuse for not remembering what's been said there.
We're quite short of Dutch-speaking brethren these days to help out, but English brethren come and it's translated into Dutch, so that's not a problem. We have a couple of Bible classes a week, don't we? We play games in Dutch and English. We go out for trips. We go out for pancakes, which is quite a Dutch experience.
Pannekoekenhuis.
Yeah.
That's one word in Dutch, okay.
What the one word you understand?
Oh, no, there's all sorts of words I can understand, actually. There's some fantastic words. A bit of a digression there. Okay. Dutch, like many languages, has words that sound like what they are. And onomatopoeic.
That's the word.
Yeah. And the word for resurrection is opstanding.
Oh, okay.
And upstanding. Yeah, I think it's a fantastic word.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, because it's a key.
I don't know, it's onomatopoeic, but yeah, it says.
Yeah.
It says what it
does. What it says on the tin. That's upstanding.
That's
the phrase.
So that gives you a bit of a picture about the language a bit.
Well, tell them what Rudolf said about Dutch.
Oh, yes. One of the one of these two brethren that was actually the Delft Technology College, he's fallen asleep in the last few years. Brother Rudolf Frischmeier, which literally means Rudolf Rich Farmer, as in Boer, as in farmer.
Yeah.
And
he, as in the Boer War.
Yeah.
Well,
okay.
If you history goes back that far. Yeah.
And he always said, Brother Paul, you must always remember that Dutch is not a language, it's a throat infection. It's very... no disrespect to any Dutch speakers, it's a real challenge to actually learn.
They say it's very hard. I spent many an hour on the Dutch campaign week with a brother trying to teach me how to say grapes in Dutch. I can't hear the difference with how he said it and how I said it, but it's still
Drouven.
Draufen.
Draufen. Draufen.
It went on and on for lots of meal times, didn't it? But, I still can't say it. They think it's very amusing. They like you to try.
And we like to try.
And we like to try. They like singing. Quite a lot of them like singing. So we do some hymn singing.
Do they sing in Dutch?
They sing in Dutch, we sing in English. There is a Dutch brother that sings in English, and there are Dutch English people that like to sing in Dutch. So it's quite a cacophony, but it's all okay.
It's making a joyful noise unto the Lord, very literally. And it makes you smile the first time you experience it, because it works.
We have done teaching English brothers and sisters a Dutch hymn, haven't we? So yes, that we can all sing together. Okay. That's quite nice.
Yes.
Very throaty singing.
Very throaty singing. Yeah. I don't know if it comes over as much in the singing.
I don't know.
But we do quite a lot of leaflet distribution. So
yeah, you
get good exercise.
Yes.
And when the children were little, there's little parks everywhere. So we'd like build for 20 minutes, then you'd find a little park, and then we'd let them play on the park for 10 minutes. Then we'd carry on and find an ice cream shop and
a pancake shop next.
Oh,
to the park.
Yes, or kid's coffee shop.
Yeah.
Coffee shop, ice cream particularly, isn't it?
But they, our kids, we think they enjoyed it. We had great fun, but lots of apartment type blocks in the Netherlands, and all the post boxes are downstairs in the lobby area. So you'd go into a block of flats, and you'd have 100 leaflets in one go.
That's the dream, isn't
we
it?
We used to save those to the end and when they get tired.
An 8 or 9 year old, this is fantastic.
It's great, like, for an adult, Paul, let's be honest.
It's Aladdin's cave. Yeah.
But they used to try and give those to us when the children were about. But we like children coming. We usually have families come with children, don't we?
Yeah, it just reinforces what we are, which is an ecclesial family.
Yeah.
And we know God places the solitary in families, and it's just part of our ecclesial family.
Hmm.
Yeah, we've got some, quite a few of the Dutch brothers and sisters now are older and can't get out in the day, so they're happy to watch the children play. And yeah,
just
we've had one older brother sitting on the floor playing trains, haven't we?
And we've had older brethren, we were at one location and they had some pedal go-karts. And I've got visions in my mind of this 80-year-old brother. Going pedalling on this.
Like GQ.
Yes, this was a GQ moment, definitely.
Crazily hurtling round the campsite, whatever it was.
Little moments.
Yeah. But yeah, we take families and young people and singles and married couples and
everybody.
All sorts of people.
Are there any interesting stories about brothers coming in or sisters?
Yes, but perhaps one relatively recent story, Brother Henk, a peripatetic music teacher, a specialist music teacher, played a number of instruments, and
his euphonium once to the campaign.
He did.
His what, sorry?
Euphonium.
What's that?
It's a mega sized tuba.
Oh wow. Okay.
A tuba but bigger. Okay, yeah. And he came at the, perhaps explain a bit about the geography background of the Netherlands. The Netherlands, if you like, because of historic background and various events over hundreds of years, has sort of like an area across the north, which is sort of more Protestant biased, an area in the south closest to the German border, which was more Catholic biased, and other bits between, if you like. So
it's got a Bible Belt.
It has a Bible Belt, which is a word and language you perhaps mostly associate with the South in the US.
Yeah.
But it has a Bible Belt.
Historically, it's probably not.
Historically, less so. And so there is an attitude to believing that it's appropriate to have some religious views, either Catholic biased or Protestant biased, if I like. And the key Protestant group is the Dutch Reformed Church. So Henk, Brother Henk, I think he came from a Dutch Reformed background, so an evangelical Protestant type background. But basically had, over a number of years, become dissatisfied with the teachings. And as I understand it, he came to a conclusion that, you know, certain key tenets of what they were saying were wrong, and he didn't believe in a personal devil, and, you know,
he believed there was one God. That was the main thing, I think.
Yeah. And progressively started building a set of understanding of Scripture, which we would say is just the fundamental truth that we understand. And eventually, literally, came across Christadelphians, Buddhas in Christus.
He found them in England.
Oh, in English?
He found an English website first.
Yeah. Okay. And then from the English site, got to the Dutch site.
Because his English is very good.
There are two Dutch websites. And he said, and he contacted, I think it was the Adia occasion, wasn't it? And said, I found you, I believe the same as you, please baptise me. And it was just that, you know. So obviously with a period of time of understanding, he was indeed just baptised. And that's how he came into the truth. But brothers and sisters have different stories, don't they? But that's one that certainly sticks to mind.
Yeah. Do you have a standout memory or moment from your times campaigning?
I think, go on, Jan.
Paul loves this one. It's most embarrassing. I was leaflet distributing one day, and you know, sometimes you get to a front door and there's a note on it for the postman or something, leave a parcel around the corner. Well, this one said Nat, and then there were some words in Dutch which I obviously didn't understand, so I thought it was obviously a message for somebody called Nat.
It could be Nathaniel or Natalie or
anybody. So
it's Nat.
Put my leaflet through the door, and about 2 seconds later, as I'm receding down the path, a very irate Dutch person came out waving this leaflet, and it transpired that Nat in Dutch means wet. And it was on the door, this note, because there was wet paint, and he wasn't very impressed. But I just apologised in English, and yeah, a bit of hasty retreat, really.
Oh, that's interesting, because you do sometimes get questions, because, you know, we don't speak Dutch, and people don't expect to see English people distributing leaflets.
Well, if we talk to each other, they hear that we speak
English. And it can, you know, prompt a conversation. Well, what are you doing here? Why are you doing this? Which, of course, is just an opportunity, isn't
it? We've had discussions with Jehovah's Witnesses, haven't we?
Oh, yes.
In the Netherlands, when they're out preaching, and we're out as well. We're trying to not go to the same houses at the same time. But
yeah. So that was certainly an
interesting. Had a very good discussion on Israel with one, didn't we, in there? Special Bible that they've got. Sorry, we've got a building going on next door. I might just shut the door. Yeah, with their Bible, that's his slightly different version. Trying to Romans was quite interesting, wasn't it?
It was.
But yeah.
And if you had to have a soapbox moment, we might call it, a message to send out to people, what would it be?
I think initially you sort of think you're going to support these brothers and sisters, and you certainly do, but you come back probably more encouraged than they do, because they're such a witness, especially if it's a country where there's not many brothers and sisters, and they're really struggling with only a few of them. They're working really hard. They've not got, you know, a lot of ecclesial life that we would perhaps have here, with, you know, fraternals and study days, and they're perhaps only meeting on a Sunday and perhaps a Bible class, but they're sticking to the truth in those difficult circumstances, and they are very, very grateful. But their example lifts us up, doesn't it?
I would say that it is about the example of brothers and sisters who are faithfully walking in a community, and there's not many of them, and really wanting to share the gospel message. And whatever method works that they've got available, whether it was seminars or leaflet distribution or pamphlets or websites or whatever else, just wanting to do the very best that they are able to do. And you come away feeling encouraged yourself, having whatever you've managed to contribute. And I would always say that that's true wherever you go, is that your help will be much appreciated and you'll come away with more than you went.
Thanks so much to Paul and Jan for talking to Sam all about that. It's really interesting to hear about what they've been doing. The next CBM update session will be on Saturday the 15th of October at 10. The details to join that will be sent to your ecclesia and to anyone on the CBM mailing list. I thought as well it'd be worth going over what the best way of volunteering for the CBM is. You can either email the dedicated email address, which is volunteering@cbm.org.uk, or there's an orange icon on the CBM website called Get Involved, which takes you to a page full of information on how to get involved. If you go to cbm.org.uk, you'll be able to find it there if you scroll down on the homepage. We'll finish this episode with a verse from 2 Timothy 4, verse 2. Preach the word. Be ready in season and out of season. Convince, rebuke, exhort with all long suffering and teaching. Thanks for listening. God bless.